Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
J Flo in the house, yo.
Yeah. And welcome to our annual spooky special, where we are reviewing every Paranormal Activity movie for reasons. And today we are reviewing Paranormal Activity 4 and 5.
Woo! We'll get... Woo!
It's only gets better. We will give our first thoughts and then we'll go into a deep spoiler analysis. The only thing I want to do different this episode is we talked about 2 and 3 together with some success. Then we should talk about 4 or 5 separately because I feel like they're very, very different movies. So, John, what did you think? Give me your first thoughts on Paranormal Activity 4.
Paranormal Activity 4, which is the one with our freaky fan favorite actress, right?
Yes, this is the 2012 sequel now, because the first three were prequels or side sequels. And this happens this- 5 years later after the disappearance of Katie and Hunter, and we have a whole new family and spooky stuff happens. So
this suffers from... when you decide to make a fourth movie in a franchise syndrome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very close to being complete garbage for me. I gotta admit. Now, you know, if you're questioning people's motives for doing things in the first three, like this one, it's like, what the fuck are they doing? Who the hell can hold a, like you folks at home, you've held a laptop in your hand, right? You're like, this is bad. I should put this down pretty soon. But there will be full-on scenes where somebody's running with a fucking laptop facing themselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To keep camera on. And you can't argue it's to do the night mode because they're using a fucking laptop.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that as this series has progressed, I think they are finding it. It's hard. The logic of footage, found footage movies is starting to go being thrown out the window here. And we're just full blown, like just making, I don't know. I don't even know how they justify some of the moves, especially in this movie. I was there. I felt like that was even less and less true as opposed to the first three, which.
Yeah. Like the twist in this movie, didn't it just open up a can? Wasn't it more fucking questions as opposed right. to, oh, I heard a ghost sneeze. Fuck. It was ghost sneezing. Sorry, Toby. I'm not trying to talk shit about you, Toby. I'm trying to talk shit about your writers. yeah, it opened up like a can of worms for me because I was like, this is your twist?
Yeah.
Like, what happened in 4 years? I'm just going to say, what is child CPS, right? Child Protective Services? Maybe yeah. They're on their A game sometimes and things happen in between.
So... Part of the story is that there's a family with an adoptive boy and there's some new neighbors across the street and something happens, but there's like a weird little boy that kind of stalks around different yeah. all over the neighborhood, like at soccer games in the neighborhood. He's just kind of creepy. And
his character is justified at the end by so he's introduced to the movie because he's really important because so this young boy who's alone is super super important to the entire Paranormal Activity franchise because he you see where we get lost, folks?
Yeah.
You see where none of this makes any sense.
Yeah, and so he ends up, after something happens to his parents, he ends up for some reasons, as you're alluding to, John, he ends up staying with the neighbor family as opposed to, child protective services or like a friend or relative. So it seems really convenient.
The neighbor family, which people do not investigate for like half of the movie.
It's like,
allow some random kid into their home.
They're like, you have an adopted kid. This is an adopted kid. Take him too. And so we know Hunter, wink, wink, is missing, wink, wink.
Wink, wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink, yawn, wink.
Yeah. Could Hunter be this weirdo
In case you're wondering,
kid?
Guys.
Wink.
Our winks are us trying to stay awake as we watch this movie. Wink, 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 wink.
Yeah.
To be fair, this is not the worst movie in the franchise.
I'm so glad you said that. I actively disagree. Disagree. As of right now, I haven't seen all seven yet. I haven't seen the last one, but I think this is the worst one, in my opinion. Man. This is the same directing team as the third one, which I was not a fan of. And even though there's some good performances here from what's her name, Catherine Newton, and her boyfriend, I thought. They really are kind of like Matt Shively. They both, I thought, were especially the boyfriend character. I thought he was actually kind of funny and grounded and seemed like he had a character, you know? And
yeah,
I thought they both did a terrific job. The movie is different in that it focuses more on the kids as opposed to the parents, right? The first three, it's been about the parents or like about, something's going on with their kids and stuff. And this is coming from the kids' perspective as opposed to the parents who have very little to do. But there was just like what I actively disliked about this movie was that they relied heavily on jump scares and they did really poor homages to like The Shining.
Yeah.
And just a movie that I get that just doesn't have any original idea. And this feels really like the end of the series, you know, the death rattle of a popular series. It's similar to like, say, Halloween.
So
that's where I'm going with this. The Tyra Banks one. that one was fucking awful. I feel like this movie's up there because of just how boring it is.
You're saying that, but we just talked about another one we're about to review. And I would say that one is more like the Tyra Banks one.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. Like this one just like is just boring. And I feel like
this one's more like the Paul Rudd one.
Yeah, just sort of lost in
in the sauce.
I would say that it's interesting you bring up the Paul Rudd one because I feel like that particular one is similar to our next movie we'll review. And I'll explain that. Not in quality, right? But just like in terms of... I'll explain it when we get to that five. When we get to the marked ones. But for this one, I feel like... poor direction, poor scripting. Has just completely nothing new to say. Nothing new to add. You know, I really feel like if they had just left it a trilogy, it would have been like, okay, well, they told a story from beginning to end. Better for worse, right? Like, it will vary, right? People's opinions on the first three, but at least they told a concise story. And if it just stayed three, this could have been, I feel like, a much better franchise. But of course, you know, like any horror franchise or any kind of genre, they always got to sequelize everything. So we get this movie, and I feel like this movie doesn't, again, have anything fun to say in terms of like it bringing anything new. It's just kind of the same tired tropey things. So, so this was a complete miss for me. I actively did not like this movie.
Yeah. They're definitely beating a dead Toby on this one. Cause Toby's a horse. No, Toby's probably really a cat. I just saw I didn't know CinemaSins did this one, and I was like, yeah, let's see if I agree with everything he says. And I did.
Yeah.
But he, the one interesting thing he mentioned was that Toby has to be probably a cat because of all the dumb shit he does. Like, yeah. Hates kitchens, drops shit from high places, keeps pushing things off of shelves.
Yeah.
Which, again, and this one does not disappoint. Toby fucking hates kitchens.
You know how you age a movie? You know how a movie can immediately age the minute it's released is when they add some sort of like technology to it. They have the Xbox Kinect.
Yeah.
Which was, oh man, that was a rough
pretty
time.
Fucking spooky, right? When they put up those little avatars, those boxing avatars, like, oh, who's this guy? And you're like, oh no. It's an Xbox character that's a ghost.
Yeah, and they try to instead of like cameras, they do laptops. But then you run into the issue of how are they moving these laptops from one place to the other until we get to.
Well, let me introduce you to this new quality product called the laptop glove. It's a sleeve you put on the bottom of your laptop and you put your hand into this like mitten thing that's attached to it. And you can just swing your laptop everywhere you want.
They weren't wearing them over their neck like a sack of food, just a harness that had a laptop in front of them at all times.
If you want the laptop sleeve, go ahead and send $69.69 to the Skeleton Boys Pod.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah, I was not a fan of this. I think that there's some pretty good performances here. From the two main leads. I thought they were pretty good as far as just a couple, natural couple. And I will say that the angle that the kids are experiencing this and the parents isn't is something we haven't seen yet. So that was okay. And I feel like that kind of follows into the next movie. But the time from, I know these movies are like, you know, 90 minutes, right? They're like 90 breezy, 30 minutes. They're really breezy to get through. But the logic here of...
Oh, says you.
The logic of...
I'm thinking like, dude, did they make this one 2 hours here for real? Like, it's only been 30 minutes.
That's where I'm going with this. Yeah, like, I feel the time from which they start, all this weird shit's happening between the boys and her talking to her parents... And the things that are going on are like not congruent with like logic, you know?
No, and like, also, right, they don't even say like, oh, night one occurrences happen, but like 25 minutes into the fucking film, I'm like, what did we just fucking watch? What was all that stuff before?
Yeah, I know, you're right. Yeah. playing fast and loose with the sort of template that they've already established in the other three. So, and pretty unconvincing way, I think. And
like for one of our mainstay characters apparently got sent to like a facility question mark according to the small talk with the weird kid. I don't want to call him weird, but like the kid that crossed the street, like
the funny kid or
the
what do you call kids that are weird?
I don't know. It's not his fault, but you know, so the kid that's got something secret about him, right?
He's kind of touched. It's kind of funny looking.
Yeah. The kid that is touched, where it's like, oh, where are your parents or something? And like, he's like, oh, my mom got taken away or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, how, when you find out who his quote unquote mom is, like, how did, what?
No, yeah, there's a really bad twist in this movie.
Yeah, that opens
doesn't
up
work.
A black hole of a plot hole.
I think we're talking about two different things, but yeah, there's a twist between there's a twist here between the kids and whatever you're referring to. Yeah, like the whole ending of this is just, I think, so muttered and just like messy and just doesn't work. I think would be the nice way to put it. And I think that again, that this movie just like completely misses the mark for me. I don't know. Would you rather go into spoilers so we can talk about it more freely, I can get your comment on what you're referring to there.
Yeah, I think so. Because, yeah, I think this one really misses the mark for me. And luckily, the next one really does make the marked ones for me.
Oh, hits the mark.
Bam.
What? All right, let's go into spoilers.
Wait. No, no, no. Stop, stop, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
So we find out who Hunter is.
Stupid shit happens. Yeah.
Yeah. First stupid thing that happens, we find out who Hunter really is. Bum, bum, bum. It's the boy who was adopted by this new family that is our leads. He's Hunter, and Katie shows up as the mother who fell ill, which I think raises a lot of questions because this movie opens with we haven't seen Katie and Hunter, but how are they separated?
How? Well, that's what there was like some stupid thing. So the kid's name is Ben? Question mark.
Sure.
The other kid. Oh no, Wyatt. Wyatt is the name of the
Wyatt.
The,
yeah,
the touched fella, right?
He's now Hunter. He was Hunter, but didn't know he was Hunter. The kid who was acting super weird in the beginning is not Hunter, but
no, that's a random
Robbie?
Kid. So yeah,
is it Robbie? Because
oh Wyatt, right? Remember they kept. Remember his name is Wyatt, the touch kid, the kid that lives in the empty house.
I think it's. I think Wyatt is the kid that was living with the parents, and the other kid, Robbie, was the one with the parents.
Okay, so Robbie is Hunter.
So Wyatt is Hunter. We don't. We didn't follow this movie well enough.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, but that kid is also in Cooties, which was the very first movie we reviewed.
Oh, I like that. That's a fun thing.
So, who is Ben?
Ben is the is the boyfriend.
Is the boyfriend okay? Whoa, ghost motorcycles. Right?
Yeah.
Is that you?
Yeah. That was Toby riding in.
Doing his thing.
Doing it.
Yeah. So I guess, like, however these kids worked, after a while, I stopped caring. I just know, like, they really try to dress up the touch kid to be like, like a 90s grunge character. I don't explain it. You look like a Children of the Corn style. Like they like costumed him kind of funny. Just to like really establish that he's strange and peculiar.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the Robbie is the,
yeah,
is the weirdo kid. Robbie is, went really hard at him being a fucking weird kid.
I just stopped mentioning their names. I'm just like, it's like whomever that kid is.
My other problem with him is like the neighbor kid. Let's just refer to him as the neighbor kid, right? We don't know their names. We never bothered to learn them. So the neighbor kid, he's supposed to be like a fake out hunter, right? Fake hunter. He ends up,
yeah.
And then he disappears. And I'm not, don't completely understand how this witch coven is using this boys or children, which kind of leads into the fifth one a bit for me. Cause it's like, I'm not understanding how any of this works, which is, very contrived.
Which is stupid. So after watching all of them, I try to watch like how does this fucking fall into place? Cause I don't want to get too into it, but I was completely wrong about the timeline of the fifth one. From when I initially saw it.
Okay.
And then you're not going to understand any of this until you see the sixth one, which is not great. And like, but they explain what these kids have been doing in the interim, which is like, why didn't they explain this before? Because none of this makes any sense.
Right. Yeah. And the kid that belongs to like the main family here ends up being Hunter, and I'm not sure why he got separated from Katie. Real Hunter got separated from Katie, and they don't really explain that. I'm not sure why or how he got into.
There's there's like an off comment, which I forgot about too until I saw the CinemaSins version of it, where apparently Katie was taken away according to Neighbor Kid, right? And that's how he explains like his parents are gone. And you got to remember that Katie's technically supposed to be his mom. And then Katie goes back to the empty house, which is like, I'm assuming that house was in the first three. I don't remember.
But how did this family adopt this kid?
That's exactly where it gets all like, it doesn't make any sense. Right? Also, because we've established Katie is like the super powerhouse of like, you can't get fucking near her.
She's the muscle of the sisters.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, she's a super possessed, right? So how, you know, like, how did she fight? Oh, you know what? It's like you can't, when somebody's like a muscle and when somebody's just like aggressive, sometimes they're not the best parent. And sometimes you lose children, I guess. It's okay. We're not all meant to be moms and dads. It's okay, Katie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a movie there between how they got separated. Maybe something.
It's essentially Adventures in Babysitting, except Paranormal Activity, The Adventures of Katie Babysitting.
Yeah. And then that
throwback.
Honestly, that'd be better because we know that Katie Featherston is a way really good actress, you know, and they could have given her own movie. I felt like she's kind of given she's kind of pushed to the background. Actually, going forward, she's kind of pushed to the background now. It's not really about her. About her or her sister and stuff, as much as it is about creating a mythology.
Like a dumb one too, but yeah.
A really dumb one, yeah. I agree.
Just gets worse, yeah.
Yeah. What was your thing that you didn't like?
About this movie?
Yes.
That was it. I think we agreed. When you said you thought it was different, I was like, I'm not sure. I think it's the same thing. Oh. It's just it doesn't make any sense. Like, it doesn't. It doesn't play out the way we've already established. Like these guys, like. Oh.
And the stuff they tried to do new didn't work. And I'm assuming you feel that way too. Yeah.
Yeah. That and also they try to keep like the one thing where it's like, whether it be Toby or whether it be Katie is for some reason, I guess weak or like, not as aggressive or strong until like day whatever for reasons. Even though Katie's had day whatever times 4 years or 5 years.
I feel like almost 5 years is kind of too long of a time for nothing to happen. Too much to happen. Like there's too much going on to where I don't know what the, you know.
Yeah, I feel like the only way things like this make sense is like, so let's say, for example, witches, right? So there's like this one candle, one night a year, maybe on Halloween, that burns, and these three witches pop up out of nowhere. Played by Bette Midler, Kathy and Jimmy, and Sarah Jessica Parker. Right, that's her name? Sure.
The horse?
And how they can only come back whenever this candle is lit during Halloween. And if somebody doesn't light one for like what ends up being like 30 years, because I didn't realize the movie's that old, then Hocus Pocus 2 happens. And it's actually a lot of fun. So.
What you're describing is a really great movie that would never happen. So
Hocus Pocus 2, now in Disney Plus, streaming all platforms. That's it. The president of the ADG art directed this one, so go ahead and
take support. That as you will. Yeah. To me, this is a complete miss. Cool. Do you have any last thoughts for this one? If not, we can rate it.
Let me see. My last thoughts are 3 6. All right. I just whispered 3 6.
3? Okay. I thought it was Toby. I thought Toby was whispering 3. 3.
No, Toby's like, fuck your kitchen.
10 out of 10. These movies are great. Similarly, I want to do lower. I did 2 sexy spooky bones out of 10. That's I great. Hated this movie.
I gave it 3 for actors.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
They deserved better. Yeah.
They clearly were on to better things, or at least one of them. All right. Cool. Let's move on to the fifth entry into the Paranormal Activity movies called The Marked Ones.
Yes, Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones.
John, you say this is like your favorite, probably of the series, right?
Yeah, probably. I would say so, yeah.
Okay.
It really does. I'm not going to say it's a perfect movie. It starts to fall apart at the end a little bit for me, but...
Okay.
It's a lot of fucking fun for the first hour. I really like, and I really like what's his name, George Diaz.
Okay, which one was who? Who is he?
He's the best friend, Hector.
Oh, okay, cool, Hector.
Which is funny because our main guy, played by Andrew Jacobs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what his real last name is. Also born and raised MacArthur Park, so basically right by K-10.
Yeah, cool.
Was born in 93.
All right, full.
And his best friend George Diaz, who also looks very young because we're fucking Mexicans and it takes forever for us to get old, mm-hmm. was born in 83. So they're playing best friends and they're 10 years apart.
That's funny. So Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones, was released in 2014. And it's just on IMDb, it is described as when a young man becomes the target of a malevolent entity, he must uncover its true intentions before it takes complete control of him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Also starring an of criminally underutilized Naomi Gonzalez.
Okay. Yeah. Who is she? Was she the friend?
She played Yvette. She was one of the friends, not the main friend. But she's like,
the sister.
One of my yeah. crushes.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's also, she plays, what's her name? Sister Quintanilla and the drummer for Selena in the Selena series.
Oh, yeah. So I agree with you. Like, this movie was probably the best one. And I think that had a lot to do with the fact that we have a new director. Same writer, Christopher Landon shares screenwriting with Fur Freaky, another great, you know, recent horror movie we enjoyed. And he wrote and directed that this.
Starred actress that was in the last Paranormal Activity we just talked about.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I really like that he clearly had a plan and a direction to take these movies. And I love that he incorporated, Hispanic culture.
There it is. I was waiting. And also, because they're Mexican.
Well, it's good to get away from all the white families that we're dealing with. I mean, just if I'm being really plain about it, like they're all like suburban white families. Here we actually are taking a different approach.
And like nothing was off because, you know, I got a little weary when I realized a white guy wrote this. But clearly he was talking to some people or he's married into a family because all of this is pretty fucking spot on. Like my favorite part was Olympia.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck yeah, that's funny.
They did a really good job of incorporating.
The Chihuahua was a little on the nose, but.
A little on the nose. I think they did a really good job incorporating, Southern Californian Hispanics. Yeah. Into this movie, and they did a really good job of representing
obviously we've been to areas like this. This was, I don't know, it felt like it was filmed in like definitely East LA, right?
They say it was Oxnard. So
Oxnard, really?
Yep. Oh. See, well, they mentioned that this takes place there in Oxnard. So beautiful Oxnard. So I went there once on a film shoot for like an overnight thing.
Oh, really?
Biggest surprise was that it's actually a beach town. They got a beach thing going on. That surprised me. I thought it was just like a poor part of town. Oxnard. Yeah. So, but yeah,
to me, it looked very like they did a good job of making it look very like
downtown East LA,
Lincoln Heights, or like
They did,
you know, or even further that way, like Montebello, maybe or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I would say like almost 100% of these actors are Hispanic, almost right, representing.
Except for whoever pops out at the end.
Yeah,
you need all the white old ladies to pop out.
No, we also get that somebody from the second movie pops up. She also, but she was not white.
Oh yeah, and I totally said that she never came back, and I was going to mention that at the beginning of this, like, but surprise, surprise.
She did, yeah.
For a grand total of 15 seconds.
So, the...
Exposition Alley.
Yeah, which she is did. Did
I say her name? I don't know. I was talking about an area in between two buildings, an Exposition Alley.
Her character was better. better of the series, and it's fun that she came back just for this, like, quick cameo. I did appreciate that. They did... I feel like that's something that... Chris Landon does really well. He incorporates a lot of things that have happened in the series previously that to this movie while connecting it and while still giving it its own feel and identity, right? And to me, this was probably, again, I feel like if I had any criticisms for this movie, I think that it gets, the idea that of them filming themselves kind of gets like harder and harder to believe when things are going on, specifically when... they go into the, you know, the older lady's house after she had died. And it's it was like right after she had died, they go in there and then it's just like, why are they here? Like that seemed a little hard to believe.
One thing I'll give it though is I like that you only ever go into that cellar, that trapdoor in the cellar, which I'm trying to understand the logistics of the layout of this apartment complex. Because it made it seem like they were on the bottom floor and they were going into some sort of basement. I called it a cellar, a basement.
Yeah.
But I swear that this lady lived on the second floor, but also they dropped the camera down at one point to look on the bottom floor below them.
No, she lived on the first floor. Yeah.
First floor below them. Right.
Yeah.
So like, there's like this huge, like, basement area or crawl space underneath. I don't know. It's like gigantic. And you only see it once, right? The other times when people get pulled into there or whatnot, the camera is stationary, like static, just looking towards like above the door and looking at whomever. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's fucking clever, because they probably could only afford that set for one day to shoot that other sequence.
Yeah.
So let's just like... not deal with that because it's way cheaper.
Yeah, and I think that they did a great job. I think all the acting was really good in this. All the cast was really strong.
Like, pretty much this movie has the most solid cast.
Since the first movie, in my opinion, since the first movie, I think that they definitely caught lightning in a bottle with Mika and Katie.
Yeah, you know,
those two actors. And
but these guys were like clearly. They're really good. Like they were very believable.
Mm-hmm.
Especially George Diaz. I just really like that guy. Like in my head, I thought he was going to be the next guy to blow up. And then just a little side story. He did a stage read for my brother's a playwright, and he did a stage read for one of his plays. And I was like, oh, I think that's him. I was like, that's fucking George Diaz. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Just a really, really sweet guy. Like imagine like him, how he was kind of funny in the movie and like just seemed very sweet. Like that's just the basis of his personality. Obviously he doesn't act that young, but you know.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? Don't worry, gringo. I just look illegal. Like all his t-shirts.
Yeah.
He had a bunch of t-shirts that said shit like that.
Yeah. So what did you think of, what do you think of the sort of mythology that these witches, this coven of women witches, are trying to collect a lot of boys now?
They're
trying to mark them, which is a new take. Not just Hunter.
It is a new take. Like, I think it's really just trying to, I don't know. Also, because I hate to jump ahead, but the seventh installment in the series says something completely different too. So I don't know. It's like such a weird, they can't really settle on one idea for the mythos of this Toby character, this Toby demon.
I think it's safe to say, I think that demon's idea is that he finds humans that he can try to get them to do what he wants them to do, which is what these witches are doing. And they want him, he wants to be brought into human form, right? Is that basically the idea? And I'm not sure they briefly mentioned that there's like a, it's not as simple as him just like possessing somebody and taking them over. There's like a now and like a 3-step process. And one of them is something having to do with the marked ones. And that seemed incredibly contrived.
Yeah. I mean, it all kind of does, but as soon as they introduce like, oh, it's like a coven of like all these old witches. I'm like, what? Why? I was like, for one, why do they all got to be old? I'm confused. And two,
yeah,
why? It's like, oh, for wealth or whatever. I'm like, I don't understand. I don't really.
Yeah, apparently they just offer them something in return, right? Wealth or I don't know. There's a lot of like question marks in the mythology. Even in this one, I feel like, I
mean, yeah. Is there anything to spoil in this one for like it the ending? Really,
the ending. What happens at the end?
But again, like that's where like I start to get real confused too, and that is not explained until the next movie.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I mean, I think that the ending. Again, like the way I describe the ending without going into spoilers would be that, do you remember how was it the one with Paul Rudd, the Halloween, how they were just trying shit? Like Michael Myers was part of a cult, so they had to resurrect a body, and like he would live forever because there was some cult that worshipped him, and there was like all of this like spooky mystical science stuff to it. I feel like this movie is taking a big shot at expanding on the mythology of it. Better for worse, right? But at least they were trying to do something completely different. And I think they did it pretty cleverly, in my opinion, tying this movie to the rest of the franchise.
To the very first one, right?
Yeah, they without spoilers, but yeah, they tie it to the first one, and they kind of, the second one is kind of the one that they are, you know, supposed to add, you know, follow up with, which I'll note that Christopher Landon didn't direct or write. So I think it does suffer from a lot of start and stop, similar to like the Halloween series, how they would say like, oh, you have a niece, Michael, you know, and then they just dropped that. And then they, you're this endless spiritual killer thing. And then they just dropped that after two movies. It was like the start and stop with like creating a mythology, which I actually will give Christopher Landon some credit to actually trying to connect these movies to the franchise. I'll give him some credit for at least trying something. You know?
Yeah, I guess so. But like, we've already run into this problem in the last movie, which I know he didn't write, right? He didn't write the last one?
The third one.
The fourth one? Or did he write the fourth one?
No, he did actually write the fourth one, but he had a partner, I believe, like a co-screenwriter.
We start to run into that problem of it doesn't make any sense for this X amount of time to have passed.
Right.
Which I feel like this movie has the same problem, because then now I start to question like, but there was all this time for this to happen already.
Mm-hmm.
For certain things to happen already, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. This is kind of an odd one to fit in. in terms of.
I think one thing we haven't pointed out is one of the main focal points is our main protagonist, who turns out to be. I mean, I don't think it's spoiling anything when you realize who like the main character is, because you know that person's eventually going to get hurt or whatever.
Right.
Is celebrating his 18th birthday and also graduating from college, which is not college, high school, which is not that important, but it was more important that he turns 18.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. No, yeah. I think that, and I did like that. I think this is the first time in the series that we've actually seen how what processes somebody would go through as he's being possessed. At first, yeah, you know, the kids are super excited.
Special powers, right?
Yeah, yeah, they were super excited about like the powers that he had, and about how they were able to communicate with it, right, through that little game, that touch.
Oh, Simon Says, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were able to communicate with the...
Which I thought that was a fun little throwback, because that game has not been popular mm-hmm. since like the 80s, or maybe the 90s, I suppose.
It was clever, yeah. I agree. It was clever to
which
wait.
Which is what confused me about the first time I saw this movie, which I just kept it in my head until I saw this one. I was like, wait a second. I was under the impression that this was a secret prequel.
Oh, no, I think it's...
No, it's definitely set sequel. In present day 2011 or 12 yeah. or whatever. But
yeah.
Yeah, initially when I first saw it, I thought it was a prequel, especially because of the ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I remember when I first saw that ending, I was like, whoa, that's actually badass.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I know it's not a prequel, it might be a little bit dumb, actually. But, I mean, it's cool. Trying things.
Right, yeah. That's where like I said, I'll give it credit. It's definitely trying things. It's definitely trying to, like, you know, revive life into a pretty, you know, troublesome franchise, you know, in terms of like story. Yeah. Like, how do you keep each film interesting? You know, like, I think they this one at least was like, you know, shooting for the fences, you know, it was trying to do something really different, which I will always applaud.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
So, John, how do these movies connect? Let's start there.
Initially, I think because I didn't. When I saw this movie, I think I saw it. I did rent it, but I think I rented like a DVD of it. Right? Is it that old?
Possibly.
Sort of. Like 2014. Like, sort of, right? I think like when like streaming services weren't that big. And, you know, Netflix at the time, like, you either had what they had or like it wasn't the vast catalog you can fuck with now.
Right.
So I didn't want to go out of my way to rent the old ones and rewatch them to figure it out. I initially thought that this was a prequel and this, or not a prequel, but a sequel that happened. Oh no, it would still be a prequel that happened around the same time as Paranormal Activity 2. And I thought when dude fired the housekeeper, that she came back home to her home there. And I thought that was the family that she belonged to.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I thought it was fucking clever. Cause at the very end we get, there's like a weird, George Diaz is stuck. Cause our main guy, what was his name?
Jesse,
Andrew Jacobs, Jesse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jesse, is possessed, right? Like the story kind of revolves around him. I thought like you find out that, whether it be a portal, whether you didn't realize that there was like a tunnel that went to, the house that Micah and Katie lived at, and it all happened at the same time. And then I just assumed that Jesse passed on this thing to the other guys or whatever with Katie.
Mm-hmm.
But then watching it this time, I'm like, no, it's definitely 2012 or whatever. And there's something that makes no sense to me going on.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to watch the next one and they explain it.
So what's happening is that the series, the big swing in this movie is that there's time travel. That's the big thing, right? And
but
they mentioned,
you don't know that.
So like,
that's upsetting a bit.
Well, when the guys go to the church, they say that the symbols that they're trying to whatever is like for to open a door, a dimension,
yeah,
right, the ghost dimension. So that is something that what's his face Toby can move through, or is now that they're trying to open.
Which I got that, and I did pay attention to that scene.
Right,
I feel like it wasn't enough to be, because I'm assuming they weren't sure if they're going to go this direction.
Right.
Right. But then the next one, they really tell you, like, they flat out explain it deals with time and space. It's
in 3D.
Like, they don't even dance around it. They're like, hey, it's shit. No. George Diaz jumps through this portal because he's trying to run away from Jesse.
Uh huh.
Which that whole sequence was kind of fun. Like, they go in with, like, their buddies, the gangbanger guys.
Those two actors are
really good too. Like, it was really surprising that even the like the C characters are like really good actors. Like the dudes from what was his name? He's a fucking Richard Cabral.
Yeah.
That guy's great from like End of Watch and like all these fucking Mayans and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic actor. Just gotta give him a little shout out because he was somebody that I think did go to prison and got completely tatted up. And then he got out of it. I think I could be wrong about this, but like there was something about like his back history where he just really wanted to be an actor, but he got it to be this, he had to be a tough guy for a while before he got into acting. And now he's just this idea of like, you don't have to look a certain way to be an actor. And he's fantastic.
Right. Yeah. So the scene we're referring to is that, Jesse goes like, he's going through this process of turning. And when he's finally turned, he ends up going to some house where there's the dimension, and Hector or Jorge Diaz walks through the dimension, and it actually connects to our first movie. Cause there is a small scene where Katie screams downstairs at the very end of that movie. She screams and Micah pops out of bed and runs downstairs, and she, stabs him and then goes back up and then like face turns into the camera or something. Demon face turns into the camera or some shit. That's how the first one ended. And now it's taking this small little like area to expand upon is that Hector was transported to that time and Katie saw Hector. Now, do I believe that Hector like remained with the camera the entire time and was like, oh, who the hell are you? Help me. Then, and then she got scared, maybe awoke from it. And
again, just George, credit to George Diaz being fucking funny. He's just like really good at his improv where he's like, hey, he's sexy lady? I need help. Like, what is it? Like, he's a sexy, like pajama lady or whatever the fuck he says. It's really funny.
And
it's just hilarious.
Yeah, now that was excellent. So now they've opened time travel and, which was a big swing for them, and Hector of course meets his end from Jesse, who follows him into the dimension, the ghost dimension, and kills him, and then of course we cut to black after that. But then that leaves something we didn't note was the way the fourth one ends is all of the coven women are at the end, right? There's like this night vision shot of all of the witch coven women.
Shit, I don't know. Alluding I thought this was to, this movie, but yeah.
Alluding to the, or maybe it was this movie. Alluding to like, there's like hundreds of women now.
Yes.
Which kind of ties into that there was this one Bruja lady who lived in this complex who was practicing it and marked Jesse. So, and that's how the kind of like that kicks off this story. But Yeah, that's the big swing, man. The fucking time travel. I enjoyed it. Again, I say I not to spoil the next movie, but didn't like the follow-up of it. Yeah, that is a very fun way to tie this series together. Is time travel always gets messy anyways, right? So yeah, like but the initial idea of returning to the first movie, the way, you know, to Katie and to Micah and all that, I was like, wow, that's awesome. That's a really fun, unique idea for a series.
And gotta say, by far my favorite of the series. It's just a lot of fun to watch. It's just funny for most of it. And then when it gets serious, it's kind of like, it's really nice. Like that whole car sequence where they're trying to drive to somebody else's house and the car breaks down and then Jesse's in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
And then they can't get out. I was like, fuck, that sucks. Like, yeah. he ghost locks the car and they can't get out and he smashes through the window. They're able to bonk him on the head. They put him in the back seat. And then what you didn't know about these witches is they have some badass lifted fucking Broncos or something.
Yeah.
Like the largest SUVs with the biggest mud tires on earth. And they slam right into him and steal Jesse.
Yeah. One thing that's unfortunate is all these characters are technically dead, right? Pretty much everybody that interacts with this ghost dies. There's like a few characters who have survived. Like all the teens in our last movie are dead. The only person that I think that's still alive is the character we were alluding to, Allie, who comes back and kind of gives them the lowdown of what happened to her family and what could be happening.
Allie. And I think the sister is still alive. So Noemi Gonzalez, I think, is still alive, right?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, the ones that were not directly involved, just in terms of like the kids that were helping Jesse are all dead, like his sister.
Their grandma, I don't think, is actually dead, right?
No, yeah, no, she's dead. They threw her down the stairs.
She died. I thought she went away in an ambulance.
Hmm. Yeah, she looked dead. She's dead enough.
Nah, she's going to come back and like be the hero of the series.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay.
Cool. A lot of fun. Movie. But a lot better. A lot better. Took big swings. I can appreciate it on that level. Cool. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Paranormal Activity the Marked Ones 7.7 sexy spooky bones.
Yeah, I think this is an improvement, and definitely we're trying something different to add to continue add to this series. So yeah, I'll give it 7 sexy spooky bones, and probably, if not the best one, the second best one in the series. Yeah, so,
because unfortunately they don't. Well, yeah, because that depends. We're going to talk about the last two, and we're probably going to have to do the same thing because they're drastically different films.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Cool. It's been fun. All right. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky, homeboy.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to